The case of 5-year-old Relia Wilson, who went missing from a Florida foster home for more than a year before anyone even noticed, once again put a national spotlight on some of the tragedies of the child welfare system. Once in the system, African American children are more likely to have charges of abuse and neglect substantiated, receive fewer preventive services, and are more likely to have extended stays in foster care. Those are statistics familiar to Regina Louise, who was abandoned at birth by her mother, raised in an illegal foster home with constant severe beatings and other abuse, only to run away and end up in a shelter for neglected children. Ironically, the same place where her mother was raised years earlier. Regina Louise, now a mother and a successful entrepreneur, tells her harrowing and triumphant tale in Somebody's Someone, a memoir. Earlier, I spoke with Regina about her book and asked her what it felt like to be unwanted as a child.
There are two sides to it, Tavis. There's the one side where you know nobody wants you. And in a big way, it's sort of sobering because you sort of get it. You're forced to grow up very, very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And you get, nobody wants me. And what do I do with that? Where do I go? So, yes, there's going to be acting out. Yes, a lot of, rebellious behavior and a lot of, self-deprecating thoughts and, a lot of self-fulfilling prophecies, very self-destructive. But on the other hand, at least for me, it forced me to always not go too far. Not go too far with my behaviors because I knew there would be no one to pick me up. It kept me from drugs. It kept me from being in the street, on the streets, because I knew enough to know, oh my goodness, I know no one is there for me. I know no one wants me. So if anything should happen to me, there would be no one to pick me up.
But see, you knew something and you were young and you figured it out. Right. Your mother was young. She didn't figure it out by your own admission. I guess what I'm getting to here is how does one caught up in a system like this go about breaking the cycle?
Right. If you take a child and if you, as the caregiver, foster resourcefulness, in fostering resourcefulness, you begin the creation or the creating of resilience. And when you have that resilience sort of feeds self-esteem. So it's resourcefulness, resilience, self-esteem. So in my travels, there were people here and there who would tell me things like, what a beautiful little girl. Oh, you have pretty eyes. Oh, you have this, you have that. So it was being able to take those things and put them in my arsenal, if you will. It was an arsenal of charms. So I learned, oh, charming. Oh my goodness. I know how to present myself to people in a way where I'm going to get something back that's positive. That's going to feed my self-esteem. That's going to make me believe I'm worth something. Even if it's a modicum of something, that's going to be a part of my resource, charm, wiles, and then that will continuously feed my resiliency. So when I'm really, really down, I can say, okay, it's not that bad. You still have a smile. It's not that bad. People look at you and they feel good. You make people feel good. So work with that. And that turned into being a class clown. And it just goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. Whatever it took to survive. And you know, as Black people, we do what we have to do at the end of the day. I mean, what I have is no different than our ancestors have had in order to take extreme circumstances and turn it around.
You are a mother now.
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me how this experience has affected your being a mother.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. I made it very clear that if I chose to have my son and if I, chose to commit myself to making sure that he had every opportunity possible to become the most and the best that he could be, then I would pull out the stops. So I've read every book I can possibly read. I am a hairstylist and I own salons. So my clients, in a lot of ways, have sort of raised me to be a good mom because I've asked them when I don't know. When I was trying to pick out a school, I would ask my clients, so where does your son go or where does your daughter go? And they would say, oh, they go to this school or that school. And I knew I had to really aim high for him. So I put him in an amazing boarding school. When he told me, you know, Mom, I really love basketball and I really want to do this, I made sure that I got, you know, private coaches and everything that I could and people who I help him read. And we just, I try and employ anybody and everybody from every angle that I can to come to him, to meet him so that he doesn't feel the gaps. I don't have a family, so there's no heritage for him. So this book is sort of a tribute to him to have that. And then what I can't give him that way, I make sure I pull in resources from every place possible so that he doesn't feel that loss. So I try to be the best mother I can, but every day that is a challenge. Every day I find myself apologizing for being a bully or apologizing for, you know, not doing it in a way that, in a different way than I did it. So he constantly keeps me in check. I constantly keep him in check, and we go. My objective is not to repeat what I experienced, and most of that begins with just showing up. So I show up for him. I had to tell him the other day, for the last 3 years, I've been writing a book, and you have been so brilliant, and you have been so generous, and I just have to tell you thank you, because in that time, I was completely unavailable to you, and you've held your own, and you haven't done anything, you know, wacky to act out the fact that I haven't been present. You've just been steady, and I am so grateful to that, and I hope that I can continue to be steady for you. So when I see that he can give, although he may never say, you know, Mom, I love you and give me hugs and kisses, that's not going to happen for a long time. So they tell me, maybe in his 20s.
It'll come.
You know, he's hanging in there with me, but he's not going to let me know too much. But
let me close by asking you, and you've answered this in part, but I sense there's a larger answer here. You suggested a moment ago that this book is in part a blueprint for him, a guide for him, a family tree for him.
Sure.
Beyond for him,
yes.
Why tell this story? Why write this book? You're comfortably, you're doing awfully well, comfortably positioned with these salons in the Bay Area. Why spend 3 years on this project?
And I'm writing book two as we speak. There are 632,000 children in the foster care system. And there's an exponential number of those children that are African-American children, children of color, who don't have a voice. And it's been only recently that stories like the Antoine Fisher story have given visibility to these children. And because he's a male, you know, I am the feminine of that story. So it's my responsibility. I've chosen to take this path to bring a visibility to these children, to give them a voice. I remember, you know, 20 years ago, I went to the library when I emancipated from the foster care system, and I went to the library to find a book that could help me keep going, give me a reason to keep going. And I did not find that book. And I remember making a pact with God, because I love my little pacts with God, that one day, I don't know how, I don't know why, one day I will write a story that will be available for a young woman who will emancipate, and she'll be able to come to the library, or he'll be able to come to the library and find this story.
Somebody, Someone, a memoir, is the new book by Regina Louise. It's a great read. Regina, nice to see you, and a wonderful piece of work here.
Thank you.
So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own. That's got his own.